To all who come to this happy place, welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome once again to the official Disneyland Resort podcast, a unique look at the magical moments and events here at the place where dreams come true. Join us each month as we celebrate the Year of a Million Dreams with a behind-the-scenes look at what's new and exciting here at the Disneyland Resort. And now, here is your host, Michael Gohagan.
Thanks for joining us. Well, summer is certainly in full swing here at Disneyland, and the Year of a Million Dreams has captured the imagination of Disney fans worldwide. With exciting new adventures, like Finding Nemo's Submarine Voyage and Pirate's Lair on Tom Sawyer Island, it's a great time to visit the place where dreams come true. Speaking of dreams, have you ever wondered what it would be like to venture inside the imagination of Mickey Mouse? Well, each night, along the rivers of America, Mickey and friends conjure good and battle the forces of evil in Fantasmic, a thrilling musical pyrotechnic spectacular that is currently celebrating its 15th anniversary. This guest favorite is full of cutting-edge special effects, including a 75-foot-tall fire-breathing dragon and three huge movie screens made entirely of water, which are used to feature classic Disney animated clips during the show. Now, when Fantasmic debuted back in May of 1992, the buzz around its debut was so intense, fans began lining the rivers of America at park opening. Fast forward 15 years later, and fans are still arriving several hours early to stake out their seats, a testament to the show's continued popularity. Fantasmic show manager Rob Sutton and show director Carla Carlisle have been with the show since its inception and talked to us about how this evening spectacular was created and how it's evolved over the years. All right, well, we are here in New Orleans Square, and we're getting ready for the evening, and I'm joined now by Carla and Rob, and we're going to talk all about Fantasmic. So first of all, Carla, tell us what it is you do here at the Disneyland Resort.
I am a show director with Entertainment Creative Development, and I am actually the operating show director for Fantasmic.
And yourself, Rob?
I am the show manager for Fantasmic and also the manager for Parade Maintenance for Entertainment. Carla and I have both been on the show since before they broke ground.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. Having worked with something like this for 15 years, when you come away, I mean, what's the part that you're particularly proud of?
You know, this show just, for some reason, I think it's everybody that's worked on this show, not just those of us who've been since the beginning. It's something about it that just becomes part of you. Just the building of it, it's tiring. It was, you know, you wanted to pull your hair out. You'd watch the sun come up and you'd still be here when it came back up again the next day. But we put everything into it and we're so proud of it. The level has remained right up there with the peak entertainment that Disney's ever done. And you're just proud. You're never embarrassed. You know, you're out here. You hear the audience. The show was built to last 5 years. That was it. It's going to go away. And 15 years later, it's still here. And as you see, it's 4 hours before the show begins, and there are guests sitting down to see the first show.
Well, now, obviously, if I'm sitting down here watching it, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier, Rob, behind the scenes, you said, how many people is it that are working on this?
There are 109.
A lot of people.
A lot of people involved in the performance each night, and that doesn't include our guest control and attractions people that are on the island. These are 109 people on the show during the performance.
Really?
For the people that drive the boats, show services, technical services, costuming, stage management, the performers, you name it, out there. Pyro, can't forget them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people. It's the most people we have on any show.
Now, essentially, are you the guy that gets to sit here and kind of hit the go button or the start button? Is that...
Sometimes. You know, I have a great staff in stage management. 5 theatrically trained stage managers that call this show. So, yeah, it starts with go, but it doesn't end with that. There are, you know, quite a few cues to call throughout. The show is built and choreographed to run seamlessly, and it's the expertise of these people that when something doesn't go as planned, how we can adjust to that so our audience never knows.
Right. Well, now, obviously, you get this kind of this great vantage point, and there's a couple, I kind of see them, some towers and some control booths around. But I have to imagine each night, I mean, you're right in the middle of kind of the oohs and ahs as this is taking place, right?
Yes, yeah, sitting out here in the middle of all the guests, when they're screaming and yelling and smiling and waving and clapping and dancing is just the best time. It's I love it. I love coming out here and watching the show, so it's great to be a part of it.
We were really fortunate because we were down for a couple months because we had some changes on the island for Pirate's Lair and then the Pirate's premiere that happened out here in May. And then we came back up in June. So we were down for about 4 months, and you kind of forget. So we first night, show came back up, and we were all out here with our vice president, and the audience, just the response and the clapping and the screams and the yells, you know, it hits you like a wall. And, you know, the performers can hear it. It's not often performers can hear that, especially for the size of stage we have. It's just amazing, the response.
Well, I mean, you know, unique to kind of what you do here. I mean, a lot of times when you know, in your job or your career, you don't get that kind of that instant gratification. But in your case, every single night you get to experience that.
Absolutely.
And if you can hear, somebody that's already excited.
That's right. So we're fortunate that we have a very great success rate and we operate, you know, run on time and make the show go out, because we do get that immediate. I'm right out here in the middle. So if good or bad, I'm going to hear it.
Well, now, also, if I'm coming here with my family, any kind of hints? I mean, is there, you know, where should I try to stake out? Is there any kind of good rules of the road you can pass along?
I'll give you a big tip. If you're going to be here for the entire operating hours of the park, so you're going to be here till midnight, 11 o'clock when the park closes, and you have time, come to the second show, the 10:30 show. Families, you know, with little ones, they'll tend to come to the 9 o'clock show, and they'll line up early. They see fireworks afterwards, because you can watch fireworks from here, this venue, right afterwards. So
okay.
It bookends us. It's great. And then they head home. And so we have a greater opportunity after that. You don't have to wait either. 9 o'clock show ends, 9:30, they come in at 10:30. But, you know, we have great viewing all over the place. I mean, people would consider, you know, center, right in front of the mill, to be center. But, you know, the show is designed to be able to see it all the way around. So.
Do if I were to watch the show from different vantage points, do I see the same show, or do I get a little bit of a different effect?
Oh, you're going to see a different show. Obviously, you see the different angles and the different points and stuff. But, you know, the routine, the stage is so vast, as far as your eye can see on the river, that you're going to see different choreography from where you are. You know, especially in the princess or the monkey section, you have one barge in front of you at the beginning and another one at the end. You're at a different part of the performance. And, you know, Carla can probably talk about that more.
And maybe, Carla, you can. I mean, it's interesting. You refer to it as the stage, but, you know, here we are sitting, looking out on a river and an island. But and when you say stage, Carla, what's considered the stage here?
Well, that's what the magic of this show is about, is that you come out here during the day and it's water and canoes and the boats and the Pirate's Lair now, and it all feels like a very organic environment out here. So what the magic is, when you sit down here to watch the show, all of this color and sound and water and lights and performance comes out from this organic area. So it's just amazing that you can see that you would never think during the day you'd see that. So that's what's kind of really amazing about it.
Kind of immersed in the stage, if you will.
Something for people that haven't been here, if they're coming to see the show. You know, when you come out to see the show, you'll see three large light towers on the mainland surrounding it. But in the daytime, when you're walking around, just see if you can figure out where they came from. Without really, you know, if you'll really look hard, you'll see. But it really is... It's New Orleans Square in the daytime. You would not know Fantasmic was here. And then all of a sudden, you've got 40-foot towers sticking out of the ground, you know, right before show. So
back to the stage. So the cider mill.
That happens a lot.
I can tell you two get along, don't you?
We've been together a long time.
So the cider mill, and in front of it is some landings, and we call that stage. But really, the entire water is the stage also.
Right.
You know, anything that the guests can see, you're really on stage, and that's what we use that in all of Disney. So.
Well, it's you know, it's a lot kind of like the big fireworks show as well, where they use this term immersive, right? But even though it is a stage, you're kind of in the middle of it.
Exactly. That's what's the magic of it, because you feel like you're right with the performers, the characters, the fountains, the water, the film. You feel really inclusive with it, and it is very immersive.
Okay, well, now we're going to watch it tonight. Anything I should keep my eye out for? Outside of everything?
Everything. You're just going to sit back and be overwhelmed. You're going to just be taken in. You're going to walk away. I'm sure I'll bank on it. You're going to say, wow. And I think it's the second or the third or the hundredth or the thousandth time you've seen it after that is when you start really taking in the specific different things. There's so much to see.
Well, perfect. Well, Rob and Carla, thank you so much for taking the time to come along and chat with us tonight.
You're welcome, and please, everyone, come on out and see the show again. It's still fabulous, and we want it to continue.
Absolutely. Best show at Disneyland.
Well, great, and I'm certainly looking forward to it.
Fantasmic might best be described as an outdoor theatrical experience that captivates the senses. But in order to bring Mickey's imagination to life, the show's producers went searching for a unique musical score that would capture the essence of Mickey's imaginative journey. They turned to Disneyland resident composer Bruce Healy, who created the show's score titled Imagination, a mix of Disney classics and original themes created specifically for Fantasmic. We sat down with Bruce to talk about the process of creating the music for the show and the unique production methods used that led to groundbreaking techniques in how musical scores are produced.
Well, Bruce, tell us, what is it that you do here at Disneyland?
Well, Michael, I'm senior music director and producer for the entertainment division here at Disneyland Resort.
Well, now that's kind of a fancy title. I mean, to the average park guest, what's that mean, you know, kind of your day-to-day responsibilities?
Well, it's kind of a dream job, actually, because I get to do not only music direction, which involves the creation of music and the selection of various kinds of musical resources, but also I do music production, which involves selecting the resources to get it produced and recorded and mixed or performed live, if that's what we need to do. And it's a lot of fun.
Well, so it sounds like your work is something that a lot of people are going to experience here at the park on a number of different kind of parades and attractions. Is that correct?
Right, Michael. I'm fortunate to be involved in all of those kinds of things. And so the music that I produce and that my department produces is for all of the parades, all of the live stage shows, and much of the live musical groups that perform here at the park.
Well, now, one of the things we really wanted to talk about today is we're covering Fantasmic. And as I understand, you have played a key role in that since the very beginning.
Yeah, it was kind of a great opportunity, probably, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to create, compose, arrange, orchestrate, and produce music for a major event like that that has never been done before.
Well, tell us a little bit about that process. I mean, I have to imagine at some point somebody comes to you and says, we're going to do this new spectacular over in New Orleans Square, and we need music. I mean, what happens? You guys sit down. How's the process work?
Well, the show director and creator of that concept came to me and said, Bruce, we got to put together some music for this show. And her name was Barnett Ritchie, and she had a lot of great concepts. And she's very much a visionary in the big sense of the word. And so we started developing these ideas, and she told me about the various segments of the show, what she wanted to do in each segment, and I started, in my own mind, developing my own visual storyboards, if you will. Eventually, we got some artwork for me to look at, which is sort of akin to the storyboard process in animation, but not exactly. And so I used that as inspiration. And I used all of our conversations about those different segments of the show as inspiration, and just sat down and had to come up with something. You know, mother is the necessity, isn't it? the necessity of invention. I don't know, how does that go?
Well, now I'm curious. When you're working on music like that, has the story already been laid out? You know, like here's the high point. We need something big here, or is there some collaboration?
In this case, the story was pretty well laid out, it was even many of the music choices in terms of what song we would play where in the concept was pretty well laid out.
And how long did this whole process take from, you know, from, hey, we're going to do this to, you know, we're ready to record and go?
Well, as I recall, it's a bit of a blur now. It was back in 1992 that the show opened, and we were developing it in mid-1991. And so along the way, you know, it was a rather protracted process of trying ideas, doing demonstration recordings of different segments of the show that I would do on the piano, and then finally arriving at what the refined music for the segments would be in a demonstration form.
Now, when you went to record this, is it done, I mean, do you sit down with an orchestra, or what's the process of actually recording the track?
Well, it's an interesting show from the standpoint that it has many of the elements that a feature film would have, such as synchronization to film, but it also has many live performance elements, and we wanted it to flow seamlessly from one to the next. So I had to use techniques of both film scoring and writing for live performance in the development of the music.
And was it, it was recorded in a kind of a multi-track layer approach, is that correct?
That's right. I took my demos and we used those as our basic template for all of our tempos and everything. And then I orchestrated and employed some help from other talented orchestrators to orchestrate the music. And then we recorded it in segments that then would be edited together. And the recording process was, so I'm told, I didn't know I did it at the time, but I'm told that I was one of the first, if not the first, to record a symphonic score in layers. And so I started with the string section, and then I layered in the woodwind section, and then I layered in the percussion, and then I layered in the brass. And we mixed it from there. And there were also some synth elements and choir elements and vocal elements that were also overdubbed.
If I were a music student, you know, if maybe I'd studied music, would I notice when I listened to Fantasmic different themes for different characters throughout the show?
Absolutely. That's one of the things that helps unify it the best. There's a theme for Mickey, there's an heroic theme for Mickey, and then there's a beautiful theme for Mickey. And it's all about a Mickey's imagination, so anything goes, if you will. So there are those two themes, and then there are other themes that come and go for the witch and the evil villains and even a little bit of a Tinkerbell theme along the way.
Now, when you sit down to do something like that, I mean, how do you know when you're done? I would think that there's a terrible, I don't know, the sense where you constantly want to tweak it a little bit and tweak it a little bit, but at some point you got to say, I think I got it.
That point, we came to that point, I think, at the end of our mixdown process, and once we had done our first assembly of all of the music cues for the show in time, and we played it from top to bottom and felt pretty great about it. And we had put each one of these segments under the microscope, if you will, for so long that it was great to kind of assemble it all and sit back and listen to the whole effect. And at that point, I think that's when we knew that we were maybe not completely done, but we were done with the music production aspect of it. We still had sound effects to go, and we still had integration into the environment.
Sure.
To do.
Now, one of the things that I think anybody that experiences Fantasmic walks away from that show with is the amazing sound system that's used to convey the music that you put together. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's one of the great things about working for Disney is that you have a lot of very talented people, design people, and technical people that are able to come up with great systems to deliver the show to the guests. And this was no exception in that case. And we had a great system installed on the island, which consists of three major speaker clusters that deliver the audio for the three viewing areas, if you will. But then we also took advantage of a sound system that already existed in the park for the original version of the show, which were the lamppost speakers along the seawall there. As time progressed and we learned more about, let me back up one second. We also had the opportunity to install some surround speakers in various buildings, in the buildings that are behind the audience. So over Frontierland, there's one over the French Market area, there's one over the Haunted Mansion area, to act as kind of rear fill surround speakers. So we're making our own customized surround sound design with this. Then as time went on and we learned more about the effect of the audio on the audience and the environment around us, we refined the sound system and introduced our speakers that come up on lifts along the seawall to give us a bigger stereo image than we had before. And we also have some fill speakers on the backside of the towers. If that's not giving away too much of the magic, you know.
Sounds like my home theater. I'm constantly upgrading it.
Yeah. So along the way, we introduced new sonic elements to the system and to the advantage of the show and to better focus the show for the audience.
Well, having been so closely tied with the music and the score and the production, I mean, when a park guest comes away from Fantasmic, as far as the music is concerned, what is it you hope they take away with that experience?
Oh, I hope that the audience is transported to a place they've never been before. And I hope that the musical score and all of the sonic elements to it are not conspicuous. You know, I'm hoping that it'll be inconspicuous, have an inconspicuous effect on them.
Perfect. Wait, well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks a lot. My pleasure, Michael.
All right, well, I've just met up with folks that are camped out here early for Fantasmic. So let's go around real quick and get just your first names.
Jenny.
Cody.
Trisha.
Marcia.
Now, just after I started chatting with you, I found out, even though you're all sitting together, you're new friends, I guess. So we just met here on the banks of the rivers of America. Now, and where are all you from?
I'm from Barstow.
Okay, and yourselves?
Washington State.
Okay, so great. We have a little California, a little Washington here. Well, I got to ask you, it's about 2 hours before Fantasmic, and you guys are camped out here. Why?
Because Fantasmic is fantastic. It's great. It's worth the wait.
Is this something that you normally, I mean, is this kind of a normal thing for you when you come to the park? You'll kind of plan ahead to camp out for this?
Absolutely. I mean, we plan on coming here every time we come, so yeah.
And how about yourselves?
Oh, yeah. It's the first thing I check in the schedule. And then we get our dinner and plan it around it, and we just are always here for this.
Well, it's the first thing that you check in the schedule. So that's got to be a testament to how much you enjoy it.
Oh, it's awesome. There's no way to describe it till you see it.
All right, well, if...
I've never seen it. This is my sister, and she said, this is what I will do, so...
And you're along for the ride.
That's
right. Well, okay, let's talk a little bit. What is your process, then, for Fantasmic? And so if I've never come and seen it before, let's say, and I'm just finding out that people kind of stake out some real estate a little bit ahead of time, what would you suggest is a general process for experiencing it and camping out early?
Oh, well, at least an hour and a half beforehand, you just find a good spot, and one of you stays and holds your place, the other one goes and gets dinner, and then you just stay and wait. Yeah.
That's right. When I first wandered over here, we were joined because you were off getting the food.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. It better be as good as she promised. I'm sure it will be. Marcia said it's great, so I'm absolutely convinced it's going to be worth the wait.
Now, you heard how they plan. Our friends here from Washington State, is that about what you do, or do you have a slightly different tactic?
No, we usually come here about 2 hours before, find a place right along the river. Like she said, we go and get dinner and come sit and talk, and we often meet people when we're sitting here, and so it's great for meeting up with new people and watching the show.
Sure. Now, we haven't heard much from you, but what do you think of this whole experience?
I think it's a great show.
Well, I'm going to let you all get back to eating, but I really want to thank you for spending the time chatting with me today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Just as the rivers of America come alive at night for Fantasmic, there's even more adventure to be found during the day. The new Pirate's Lair on Tom Sawyer Island features a chance for pirates, young and old, to explore the island and search for buried treasure. Pirate's Lair is the dream of the classic Mark Twain character, Tom Sawyer, who was fascinated by pirates and considered himself an expert on their adventures. On Pirate's Lair, his swashbuckling dreams come to life as guests explore every cavern and passage, just as Tom and Huck did in their explorations. But beware of the dangers lurking on the island, as gruesome spirits of the past are haunting every dark recess and cavern. Imagineer Michael Sprout, who helped craft the stories behind these new adventures, gave us a behind-the-scenes look at what fans can expect when they venture across the river in their own search for treasure.
As a park guest, what can I expect when I get to go to the new Tom Sawyer Island, which is now Pirate's Lair on Tom Sawyer Island.
Yes, it's still Tom Sawyer Island, but the pirates have taken over. And you will notice that right from the beginning. You'll see a sign that says Rafts to Tom Sawyer Island. But there is a definite pirate influence right from the start. There's a mast with the term Pirate's Lair across it that's draped over the sign. Pirates have laid claim to this island. And you will be greeted by a pirate as you step aboard the raft. Something that Tom would have loved. And you'll also see that flying from the mast of the raft is a pirate flag. We also went back, we looked at the original design. Sam McKim, who is one of the original Disney Imagineer designers of the attraction, his first drawings showed the raft with a pirate flag on it. So we thought, great idea, let's put that back on. So a pirate will welcome you aboard. He says, you know, you're part of the crew. Let's go to the island. And you will also be supplied with a map, something the original designers intended to do also. And every guest was handed a map as they got on the island that helped them explore. We are bringing that back. We have a map that is updated, but very much in the spirit of the original map, and that's going to add to the fun of discovering what's on the island.
Well, now, if I come here with my kids, and I assume now on this map, is there something for us to do with this map? And what are the kinds of things that I get to explore while I'm here?
Well, part of the fun of the movies is learning about the pirate brotherhood, the brethrenship of pirates. And as you explore the island, you sort of are welcomed into this brotherhood. There's a lot of, you know, as we know, there's caves on this island. And they were always rumored to be haunted. And I think you'll find that most of those rumors are true now. And it's also rumored that there's buried treasure there. And I think if you're keen enough to follow the map, you'll find some of these treasures. But they are guarded by various specters and spirits and ghostly pirates.
Well, now, as it nears completion, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's somebody that's been with the project since the beginning, with writing it and coming up with these ideas. I mean, what's it like now to kind of see it all come together?
Well, it really is exciting to sort of get your hand involved in a classic Disney attraction. Tom Sawyer Island was a favorite of Walt Disney's. He actually hand-drew some of the designs for the island, and to actually be involved in adding to it, which is something he espoused all the time. We were always improving our attractions. The island opened, I believe, in 1956 or '57. So, and it's just been loved by people. It was so right, you know, it fit so well into the imagination at the time that people have loved it ever since. And what we're doing is trying to add, you know, current interests that actually fit together with the original interests of the island and bringing them to life and adding more and more. We have, you know, Walt was a great believer in new technology, and we have new technologies that are going to be very evident when you explore the caves and the rest of the island and bringing things to life. And I think that, you know, one of the wonderful things about Disneyland is that it can remain classic and improve at the same time. And that's just the way we see the island. You know, we never like to mess anything up, but we like to enhance it. We did the same thing with the Pirates of the Caribbean ride and with the submarine ride and other things like that. You know, we're always looking for new ways to make the vision that was there to begin with clearer and clearer and more alive and more exciting.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
It was fun. Thank you.
So we're out here on Pirate's Lair on Tom Sawyer Island, and I've just met two young explorers. What are your guys' names, and where are you from?
My name is Luke.
Okay.
My name is Mark.
And Mom?
Julie.
And where are you guys from?
Boise, Idaho.
So what did you think of Pirate's Lair on Tom Sawyer Island?
It's pretty awesome.
Pretty awesome. What do you like so far about it?
The caves. Have
you gone in some of the caves?
Yes.
What'd you find in there?
Well, in one of the caves, Mark and I went a little bit in it, and a voice emanated from somewhere.
Really? Kind of mysterious, then?
Yes.
Now, have you guys seen the show that's out front with the pirates?
Oh, yeah. It's so funny because, oh, man, they did this one joke that just cracked me up.
It was. Well, we don't want to give it away, though, probably, huh?
No, we don't.
Now, what's your favorite thing about the island so far?
Probably the caves also.
You like the caves, and I noticed there's a lot of pirates just kind of wandering around as well.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Mom, what did you think of it so far?
I liked it. I loved the rope bridge. Yeah, that was fun.
Now, have you been on Tom Sawyer Island before, this kind of the new Pirate's Lair?
I haven't been on it since it became the new Pirate's Lair, okay. But I used to go on it as a child.
Well, perfect. Thanks so much for talking with me.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Just met some folks that have been kind of wandering around. Real quickly, what's your name?
London.
Zach.
Chelsea.
Amy.
Okay, and what did you guys think of the island?
It's pretty cool, like all the pirates walking around and stuff, and you get to like take pictures with them, and yeah.
Now, what have you explored through some of the caves?
Yeah, we were exploring through one of the caves. We kind of got lost, and we came out, and we saw Jack Sparrow walk by. That was pretty cool.
Now, did you see some of the things over here where you can kind of bring the chest up out of the water?
Yeah.
What'd you think of that?
It was pretty fun. How the pirates come out and on the chest.
All right. Now, I, you know what I forgot to ask? Well, where is it you guys are from?
Oh, we're from Washington.
Washington. Okay, perfect. Well, great. Well, thanks so much for stopping by and chatting with me.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right, well, we found some new explorers here at Pirate's Lair on Tom Sawyer Island. So first of all, what's your first name?
Marcus.
Elisa.
Gabe.
JR.
Irene.
And Irene, where is it you guys are from?
We are from Longview, Washington.
Okay, well, perfect. What did you think of Pirate's Lair on Tom Sawyer Island?
It was cool.
What did you like about it?
The sword fighting.
You liked the sword fighting? So you're tight. What was that? You liked it too? And what about yourself? What did you like?
I liked looking at the treasure, and I also liked how they did the act.
Okay, perfect. Now, had you guys ever been on the island before this time?
No, we haven't. This is our first time.
Okay, well, wow. Well, so you get the whole effect the first time out here. Now, what did you think as the leader of this group?
I thought it was wonderful. I was really amazed and impressed with everything. We saw it from afar, and we said we had to come over, so here we are.
So it was a good experience for you guys?
Yeah, it was. Despite the heat, they still performed, didn't they?
It's a little warm out here today.
Full of energy still.
Well, perfect. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Well, as you've heard, it's been a busy time here at the resort, with the excitement of Fantasmic's 15th anniversary and the all-new Pirate's Lair on Tom Sawyer Island. If you've enjoyed the show, please feel free to share it with a friend. And remember, we have both audio and video podcasts available at disneyland.com/podcast or in the iTunes podcast directory, where we also always appreciate feedback. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Gohagan. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Some imagination, huh?